And I call this period of time, I name it a certain way because it's written there in the book of Deuteronomy. What is this month referred to? The ingathering. Remember, it's the ingathering at the end of the year or the end of the season. And when I was here, some of you were not, but when we were here last Day of Trumpets, we went through a very extensive study, if I may say it, and try to explain some things that maybe it's really hard to get some pictures across. But what I want to say today is, I know that tomorrow is going to be a time when you're going to be sleepy, to be honest with you. And you'll have a time because you don't have any energy, and it's going to be very difficult for you to be able to kind of, quote, stay awake and be alert. Well, in order for me to keep you awake and be alert, I'm going to do something entirely different tomorrow, so be prepared. Be prepared by looking into the day of Yom Kippurim and be ready to have an open one-to-one talk, if I can use that terminology. And because something was very fascinating, I've thought about this, and to tell you the truth, when I'm sold on it now because of what happened to Jeff. Unexpectedly, he had to be called in by friends to say, what's this all about? And it would be very good for you and all of us, perhaps, to say, okay, what does these times mean? What does it mean? How do you give an answer to someone? And do you have biblical terminology that can back it up? And that's what I want you to try to do, to keep that part in mind tomorrow. And I should keep you awake. I'm going to be the only one speaking tomorrow up here. So, secondary, since that other room is very available for us, I suggest that if you can, especially you who have children, bring a sleeping bag, bring something that they can fall asleep in that other room, because children have a little harder time staying awake when they don't have enough food to eat. Or it doesn't mean that you don't make your kid. You should feed your kids. The Talmud is about adults. I don't understand that. But sometimes you try to teach your children what it's all about, and they're become a little bit, anxious, tired, frustrated. And so sometimes a good place for, okay, have a place so they can take a nap. And I'll be honest with you and open to you, all right? If it's too much for you, bring a sleeping bag for yourself and go in there and take a nap. Okay, though we will go through the Day of Atonement, and I have a lot to say on the Day of Atonement, but at the same time, I just want you to be aware that I'm not a person that's going to have a rod or a poker and keep you awake. If you fall asleep, you fall asleep. You know, that's it. I'm not a person that's going to come and wake you up, even though I have a loud voice. You may be out no matter what, because when you don't have enough food to eat and you're tired and exhausted, you generally are going to be, you don't care what's going around about you. Your body is just saying, take it out. All right. Let's get into this. This is the time of the ingathering. And it's very important that we kind of put this in perspective. Now, on the day of the Feast of Trumpets, I talked about a specific ingathering. Do you remember what I said about it? Blowing of the trumpet and what's going to take place? Judgment, okay. Okay. There is going to be, prior to the blowing of the trumpet, what's taking place? Tribulation on whom? On the house of Jacob. We're going to go through that again. Now, sometimes, biblically speaking, when we think of the tribulation, we sometimes picture it that's going to affect every human being on the face of the earth, no matter where they're at, no matter what. Not according to Scripture. And I explained that again, and we'll go through it again a little bit here today. In Jeremiah, the 30th chapter, it nails it exactly who is going to receive the brunt of the punishment. And now, we have gone through, I explained a little bit more about the Feast of Trumpets and when it's going to be blown. And it's going to be blown after the Great Tribulation, not before. Very, very clear there in Matthew. It's also very, very clear in Isaiah. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But today is the ninth day. Now, what does that mean, the ninth day? I very seldom ever have a chance to talk to you on the ninth day. What is taking place? Well, we know that tomorrow, and we'll go in more detail about that tomorrow, that something is going to take place. Now, remember, the calling of the house of Jacob will be done. This is what this is what the 10th chapter of Numbers talks about. And I explain to you, when the angels do their blowing, they're going to blow and gather together from the four winds, just like it says there in Numbers, the 10th chapter, from the four sides of the tabernacle, being drawn together to a specific location. Remember, Yeshua talked about that, you know, where the carcass is, the eagles gather. That's what it's talking about. It's a scenario, it's a picture of a gathering together of certain things or certain houses. In this particular place, you don't have to turn here because I'm just going to go run through it real quick, eh? Because there's a certain section of this area I want to talk about, another area I want to talk about. I'm just going to read it here. It's in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 18. I'm going to read just that one verse. Come now and let us reason together, says Yahweh. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are red as crimson, they shall be as wool. Now, it's a really odd statement of them by itself. By the way, the word reason is a really, 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 really poor translation. That word for Hebrew, which translated for reason in some of your English-speaking languages, books, refers to, basically, come and let us be corrected. Come and let us be rebuked. Not us, him, but you're going to be rebuked. Oh, when will they have this rebuke upon them? Now, in the 11th, in this chapter of Isaiah, the very first chapter, is talking about the complete house of Israel and the house of Judah. At this particular point in time, pay close attention to it. We'll get to that more in detail tomorrow. Isaiah opens up and he is a prophet to which one? He's a prophet to which nation? To which house? To the house of Judah. He doesn't mention that he is going to go and tell this to the house of Israel, but to the house of Judah. I want you to keep that part in mind. It's very, very important to kind of see a pattern that how God works and why he's going to work the way he works. What we have learned, we go through the book of Leviticus, very in detail, of what is clean and what is unclean. You remember that? Book of Leviticus tells you how, when you become unclean, you become unholy, how do you become clean again, how you become holy again, and the whole book goes through a process of step-by-step procedure of how. Now, there are two things in the book of Leviticus, which we are very familiar with, and there are two specific offerings that are required. You remember? It's a sin offering is a requirement, and the guilt offering is a requirement. If those are not offered, there is no forgiveness. All right, there is no the crime or punishment or the transgression has not been resolved. Now we say, okay, it's physical. Yes, it's physical, but it's going to tell us something more as we go on. Now, as I said, this is the beginning of the ingathering. And the first people he's going to gather, we'll get to there today, is going to be the house of Jacob. We'll see that as we go along. Now, we know that this day, a time when the blowing of the trumpets occur, prior to that, the great tribulation is going to take place. And we read in Revelations where who are the ones who are the 144,000 and the innumerable multitude? Those are the ones who have come out of the tribulation. That means they were in it. Right? How can you come out of it if you weren't in it? Well, you were in it. And we have there where Yahshua talked about some of you will be killed, murdered, slaughtered for, prior to, right? And then he goes on that chapter and says, for the elect's sake, I will call it short. Now, we have a terminology or we have a thinking of, oh, that means the Christian believers. No, we're talking about who was he talking to when he said that to? What nation was he talking to? Was he talking to Israel or was he talking to Judah? Keep that in mind. Because when we get to the end of my statement today, we'll see that he is really referring to them. And we, as people, need to know that so that we will not be caught off guard having a doctrine that is not of God. Now, these days, they're 10 days before, from the time of blowing the trumpets, the feast, or the beginning of the ingathering starts at the blowing of the trumpet. And there are 7, 10 days, actually 9 days, up to a point. And something's going to take place. For we know that it says that when God intervenes, it's going to be a really nasty time. He says it's going to be a time of clouds, gloominess, of dark clouds, and storms, bad news. Go back again to Jeremiah, the 30th chapter. Read this last on the Feast of Trumpets, and I'm just going to go over some quick notes that I feel is very, very important. We're starting there in the 30th chapter, verse 7. For alas, that day is great, so that none is like it. It is time of Jacob's trouble, Jacob's tribulation, Jacob's something that God is going to bring upon Jacob. That does affect both houses, don't get me wrong. But we have to narrow it down and saying, okay, if we see something happen, what should we be doing? Well, follow along with this for a while because tomorrow gives us a picture of why it's important. Verse 11, last part of the verse, talking about the nations. He says, but I will correct thee in measure, you can measure it out, and will not leave thee altogether unpunished, the house of Jacob. And he says, your bruises are incurable. Your wound is grievous. And nobody is going to plead your case. Nobody's going to stand up for you. No one's going to say, oh, we'll sacrifice our lives for you. No, it's gone. And no one's going to protect you, or protect in a sense, you during the tribulation. Nothing's there. No heroes. No knight in shining armor going to come and deliver you out of the tribulation. Only when he says, I will cut it short, then you come out. You will come out before. Can't come out before or after. And he said, now, all those people that you love and cherish, they're going to forget about you. They're going to say, no, forget about you. Goodbye. Don't want to have anything to do with it. But he says very something. Let's go to verse 14. He's talked about all your lovers, all those people who like you, love you, have forsaken you. They seek thee not. Don't care about you. I have wounded you. This is the Eternal speaking. I have wounded you with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one. Remember we talked about that last on the Feast of Trumpets? It is God who sends the cruel one. It's not the cruel one. It's the 30th chapter of Jeremiah. I said 30th chapter of Jeremiah, right? Yeah, okay. And so we see here that it's God who sends the cruel one. Now, we went through the story of Job a short period. Okay? Who sent the cruel one? God sent the cruel one. Oh, God doesn't do that kind of stuff. Okay. Shaddai. Oh, did he bring forth the deluge? Or did it just kind of fled out of control? And he didn't know what to do about it. No, he was in control. So we have this particular thing. I'm going very quickly here. And we have going through this particular day from which is going to lead us to the Feast of Tabernacles, which, you know, many Christians and many Jews, I really sincerely believe this, will definitely see what they have been doing wrong before, quote, the Day of Atonement, in a quote. Be careful with my words. I'm not saying it's a 10-day thing. I'm saying that the period of time when you come out of the Great Tribulation, something's going to happen to you. Something's going to happen to them. And the Messiah centers in on Judah, centers in on that area of the world for a reason, very precise reason. We'll get to that in a minute. In one sense, the Day of Atonement is a point of a complete cleansing, complete purification. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. We have a very special banner, which some of you have, most of you have seen, but I'm going to kind of explain exactly why it's in that color, why it's in that shape, why it's in that form. It's very eye-opening, for me at least. You know, in the book of Leviticus, we'll talk about that tomorrow. We won't go there today. But from the 9th chapter to the 15th chapter, there is a series of telling you what is Tomei and what is Tamor. What is holy, what is unholy, what is clean, what is unclean. How to get from holy, when you're unholy, how do you get to the holy part? When you're unclean, how do you get to the clean part? When you have polluted yourself, how do you get out of it? Where do you come because you were once, you know, how do you become pure when you were impure? That's what the book of Leviticus is all about. And then it goes in the 16th chapter, which we'll talk about that tomorrow. And something entirely different takes place. Some of the things, just a few of the things, when he said, this is Leviticus, the 10th chapter. Don't have to turn there. These are just things you're very familiar with. But the reason why he went through all this clean and unclean things is he made a statement saying, now that ye may put a difference between holy and unholy, between clean and unclean. So all this is teaching us what is to be holy, what is to be clean, what is not holy, what is not clean. We all understood that in the book of Leviticus, right? A very simple book in that sense. We think it's a bunch of ritual, a bunch of this, a bunch of that. No, it's telling you how to purify and get things ready to be clean and be ready to meet the Lord. All right? And very fascinating thing, he says, now once you've done that, this is the reason why you could learn what is holy and what is unholy, what is clean, what is unclean, that you will teach the children all of the statutes that Yahweh has spoken. If we don't understand what is holy and unholy, what is unclean, what is clean, how can we teach the statutes of God? That's in the 10th chapter of Leviticus, chapter 10, verse 10 and 11. You can write that down in your notes. But he says, you've got to teach the children of Israel. Some of those clean and unclean things we're very familiar with. You know, number one, we're familiar with clean and unclean animals, right? Number two, we're kind of familiar with the male child, the birth of and a birth of a female child, and what how many days of uncleanness it is for the woman, and how she becomes clean. And then on the third thing, we're like, oh, eighth day. Eighth day has to do with uncleanliness. What is unholy? What is not holy? And the fourth thing, one of the four things is that there is an offering of the lamb. Whole offering in this particular case that the woman gives, and a dove for sin offering. Very seldom is there anything else except a goat that is given as a sin offering. In this particular case, it's the dove that is given as a sin offering. Very fascinating. I'm not going into details about that. Anyway, go on and on. We can keep several things. In the 16th chapter, we talk about a function which the high priest does, and only the high priest does. Now, I'm going to go to another area. I want to go to the book of Zechariah. Remember, in Jeremiah the 30th chapter, it's talking about the complete house of Jacob. We got that picture. So everybody's going to be affected by it. I have a little different personal opinion about a few things, but I'm not going to talk specifically to them today. But we're in the 12th chapter of Zechariah. The very first sentence tells me something. I find it very fascinating. The burden of the word of Yahweh for Israel. Thus says Yahweh, which stretches forth the heavens and lays the foundation of the earth and forms the spirit of man within him. Okay. Did that happen on the day of creation? No. Listen carefully. When you use the word form, you're going to change it. You're going to form it into something. It's not like he made it. He breathed into his nostrils, yes. But he's going to form the spirit in man. Now, we have heard, and you have heard, and Jeff did a real good thing about the word, if I remember correctly, it was poor. It means one who is humble before God. One who has spirit is not high-minded. But one whose spirit is relying upon God, trusting God, and having faith in God. Now, that takes a while, doesn't it? Each one of us have to learn to be having a broken and a contrite spirit. How does that come about? By the Eternal forming that in us. As we are getting older, we keep going farther, we learn more and more, we learn that sometimes our spirit is not really pleased with the pattern that God is doing, and he has to say, okay, I'm going to have to get tough. Right? The tribulation is a time of getting tough. He's getting tough upon the house of Jacob. Bad things are going to come. He's going to form the spirit in us where people will respond to Hadevarim Elohim. They will respond to the word of the Lord. They will respond to what he's saying. Remember what the Jeremiah 31 chapter says? I am going to do something. I am going to write it in their mind and in their hearts. How's he going to do that? Oh, Tinkerbell. Right? Bunch of sprinkles all over you. Now you understand everything, right? You got full knowledge of the laws, full knowledge. No, you have to live them out, don't you? And you find, well, you know, I thought the law said this, and I'm paying a price. Oh, okay. You go back to the beginnings. What does it say? And you pray before God, change my spirit. Change my soul. Change my mind. That's what I want you to do. And it takes a lifetime. It does not take overnight. It takes a lifetime. It's far beyond baptism. It's a way to live. Now, as we go through this, it's to behold, verse 2, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling, to all people around about, and they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. So we got to narrow it down, right? Where are we talking about? Two main areas, Jerusalem and Judah. Why? Why not New York? Why not Washington, D.C.? Why not London? Because that's not where Judah's at. Okay. Verse 3. And in that day, I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. When's that going to happen? When's that going to take place? Tomorrow? Next week? Next year? When's it going to take place? When he does his intervention. And the day he begins to intervene, he said, it is not a time of rejoicing. It's a time of gloominess, darkness, and terror. Sometimes we forget about that. All due respect, you know, Apostle Paul talks about when the trumpet sounds and we all raise up and cry. But you know what? There are a lot of things happen before that trumpet blows. And sometimes we forget about what happened before that trumpet blows. Danger, bad news, bad things are happening. And he says, I will definitely not let you go unpunished. And it's funny here. He says, and all that, verse 3 again, halfway through it, and all that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces. Through all the peoples of the earth are gathered together against it, even those nations that are afar off. Because they're gathered against Jerusalem. So we know, okay, he's going to come. But what's the picture here? What's going to happen? Now, let's drop down to verse 7 real quick. It says, Yahweh, or Yahuwah, also shall save the tenth of second, third, fourth, fifth, last, first. Verse 8. Then he's going to defend Jerusalem. Okay. But his feast post the land of the Mount of Olives, right? And all these resurrection and it's split apart and all that stuff. Wait a minute. Something's wrong with the picture. In the book of Joel, we won't go there. You read it. He says he's going to protect or defend Judah first. And then go into Jerusalem. Now we think, quote, because of our belief system, he's going to come down and his feet's going to land on Mount of Olives. That's it. No. He's going to be in the land called Judah at war. Then he's going to go to Jerusalem and take Jerusalem. Now, when his feet land on Mount of Olives, it means he's coming down. Or he's going to walk from Judah, from Jerusalem, right up to Mount of Olives, where all the graves are at. Something to think about. Because that's what we have a picture of. But here he says, I'm going to defend Judah first, and then I'm going to go in there. Verse 9, very, very interesting now. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. And, verse 10, this is very fascinating. What's taking place? Now remember, they've gone through a tribulation. They're coming out of the tribulation. They are now protected. However, he is not there yet. He is in Judah, and he is destroying the enemies that come against Judah, and he's going to make Jerusalem a very, very powerful city because he's going to be in control of it. All right? Now, verse 10, I will pour upon the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace. What did the first verse say? What did chapter 1 verse say? Who forms the spirit in man. Did you catch that? Now, this is where the spirit of the living God now is going to form into them something called grace and supplication, and they shall look upon me whom they have pierced. Oh, you remember what Jeff said about poor? Now their spirit is broken. Now their heart is shattered. The war is there. Now he goes and he's got a hold of Jerusalem. And they are going to see and understand something they never, ever saw or understood before. And so we have to be very, very careful how we judge people. Because it's not going to happen until that time. Jerusalem will not weep until that time. The inhabitants of Israel, of Jerusalem will not weep until that time when they actually see the Messiah, the real one. Right? What do they do? Remember, we're at war here. From the Feast of Trumpets for, quote, 9 days, something's happening. Before the Feast of Trumpets, what took place? Tribulation. Now the Feast of Trumpets comes because he's going to save his people. Now, what happens next? Here we see in Zechariah, and he says, they look upon whom they pierced, and they will do something. They're going to mourn. As one mourns for his only son, and in bitterness for him, as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn son. They are in deep sorrow. What do you think that was just presented to them? What do you think they began to see for the first time? They saw, after the Messiah has done what he's done, they saw something. And they cried, though they are strong and mighty, listen to what he says. Verse 12. And the land shall mourn, every family apart. The family of the house of David apart and their wives apart. Oh, you remember what it says? I read that on David Trumpets. I will call them in and bring them in one by one. Apart, 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 apart. They're not going to go together. What will these people do? Where is their hope? Is there hope for them? Yeah. That hope is the Day of Atonement. Because you cannot go through all that without having sorrow, bitterness. You recognize you have a lot of iniquity. You have a lot of transgressions. You have a lot of sins. How do you purge them from you? In the first verse of this chapter, he says, I form the spirit in man. How is he going to do it? By a war. By delivering them out. He says, for the elect's sake, I will spare them. Oh. Who's the elect? Oh, the beloved church, right? No, he's not talking about them. He's talking about where? A part of earth. Judah. Now, for us, sometimes we have a hard time picturing, oh, those Jews will never repent. Well, that's not what it says here. They'll never mourn for what... No, that's not what it says here. They will never realize they appear... No, that's what it says here. Somebody's lying to us. Either a doctrine's lying to us, or God is. Take your choice. So on this day tomorrow, when we come to this point, they can only be cleansed by one thing. And that is blood. And when they see that, when they recognize that, yes, I'm talking about those people who live in Jerusalem. That's what this book's about. Yes, it's those people who live on the West Bank. That's what this book is about. Those are the ones that live on the in Jerusalem, Israel today. That's what this book's about. It's not about delivering, I'm sorry, you out of your trials of financial difficulties. Not you being delivered out of your difficulties of not finding a job. It's not about you and your difficulties in your health and in your prosperity or your lack of prosperity. It's not about you and your children. It's about what it says there in Jeremiah, Zechariah there. It's about the power of God. Now, tomorrow, I want you to be ready and see if you cannot explain in your own words, not just what I said today, what you have learned in the past, whatever it is, what tomorrow really is all about. Now, we have heard, you've heard rumors, you've heard patterns, you've heard the system of how the Orthodox Jews run through these things. That's okay, we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. But where does it lead you? How can you teach your fellow man who lives next door to you? How do you teach your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister? How do you teach your children? How do you explain to them? Can you actually give an answer for tomorrow? Oh, the days of off. What is it? What does that mean? Wow. Takes a long time for mourning. Now, sometimes when someone is in sorrow, I don't know if any of you in this room has ever been in sorrow. None of my business. But did your sorrow last for 2.5 minutes? Or did it last for maybe a day? Or maybe it lasted a bit longer than a day or two? And sometimes it may last to the point where you wind up being in total tears 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 days later. Yeah, that's what mourning's about. That's what sorrow's about. And you know, I want to ask you some questions. Don't tell me. Ask you some questions. Have you ever been so upset and devastated and felt hurt, and then as years go by, you become angry against somebody who told you a lie that they told you, but they didn't know it was a lie? And you begin to blame churches, begin to blame preachers, begin to blame ministers, begin to blame this writer, begin to blame that writer, begin to blame this and blame that, because you're mad internally. Like, what's wrong with you? Okay? We all go through that. I told my wife, when I was 18 years old, came to understand this stuff, by the time I was 19, ready to get mad, I went to this Presbyterian church, yeah. I decided, so I'm going to go to church, right? And, of course, there was 2 big, huge, giant Christmas trees there. I was so angry. I felt internally, I've got to get up. I want to destroy them. I want to pick those trees up. I'm a skinny guy, right? Weighed less than 115 pounds. Got to pick up them trees and smash them, right? Well, be dumb of me, wouldn't it? But I was stupid being angry for that moment in time. And I told my wife, the one thing that helped me is that I went back and I read Jeremiah. And it says, do not be dismayed. Oh, okay. Don't be troubled by it. Don't get upset about it. That's what other people do. But I'm not calling you to do that. I'm calling you to do this. And then my anger subsided quite rapidly. Has that ever happened to any of you? Don't answer. You don't have to. But when you look at this chapter, they are going to be sorry. I don't mean saying, oh, I'm sorry I hurt you. They are going to be devastated that they actually had a hand, spiritually speaking and realistically speaking, to pierce him. Because why? Blood came out. And they're going to recognize, understand all the examples that are written in the book of Leviticus. That's what the sprinkling is about. That's what the blood's about. That's what that's for. I didn't understand that. Okay, ask yourself, your fellow Christians. How many of you understood it in your Christian world? You said, oh, I'm going to go read Paul. Oh, there's Peter. There's Matthew. I'll read them. Because it's... I don't understand that back there. Right? So you left it. You left it. It was not important to you because it wasn't part of your world. But now God has let you see His world. And you have decided to make a decision. And you said, I'm going to move this direction. Pay attention. It is the eternal creator of heaven and earth who is forming your spirit in you. He is the one that's going to form it. And He said, I've begun a good thing in you. I mentioned that on the day of Feast of Trumpets. What did He do to begin it? He killed His Son. I began a good thing in you. And I'm going to finish it. Right? So, you know, it's very important that we kind of look at this thing and say, okay, yeah, we're going to go up the mountain, all right. Maybe I should go back to Isaiah and read that again and see whether or not I understand exactly what He, the Eternal, is talking to Isaiah about. Do I got the picture? Remember, it said, Leviticus 10th chapter, the 11th verse, is that once you learn what is holy and what is clean, now your job is to teach Israel what is holy and what is clean. So we go to Feast Tabernacles. Yes, we'll have fun, but remember, it's a time of learning that you're going to become teachers. You're going to become leaders. Not of the world, but of God. And so you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, and we will learn more and more and more. That's why we do this repetition thing over and over and over again. Because those 70 nations need somebody to teach them. If we understand, and Jeremiah says, if you understand what is holy and what is unholy, you understand what is clean, what is unclean, when you understand when you're unclean, how you become clean, when you understand when you're unholy, how you become holy, now you have something to teach. And it's with my blood of my Son that makes you holy. And all of Israel, primarily first the house of Judah. That's what says there in Jeremiah. Also says there in Joel. I'm going to deal with Judah first. So we need to pay a little closer attention to how He's going to set the pattern. And I'll tell you, the Day of Atonement, David, covering of all things, Kippurim means covering. Plurality of Kippurim. I'm using plurality because there's three things take place. Transgressions, sins, and iniquity. all three get covered up. Not four, not five, not 20, not 100, just those three. Just those three. Which brings me to one more statement, then I will call it quits. Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and a pride of life will be gone.